Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now.
Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
You're listening to Part of the Problem on the Gas Digital Network. Here's your host, Dave Smith.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. It's me, the most consistent motherfucker you know, Dave Smith. And of course, I am joined by the King of the Cocks, Robbie the Fire Bernstein. Back in New York, back at the studio. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, man. Fun-ass weekend out in Philly.
Oh, yeah, that was a lot of fun, man. Two shows in Philly, live podcast, live stand-up show. Both of them were sold out. Some great people, some great fun, great laughs. Really fun to bring the show on the road and to be getting back out there on the road and working out my new hour. And some wonderful people. We got some real great fans, and we appreciate all you guys who came out to see us. Robbie the Fire killed again, lit the place up, burned the place down, and we got the fuck out of there. So Frankie Bradley's, big thank you to everybody there. Cool venue, and yeah, we'll definitely come back to that place at some point. Really enjoyed that show, and we had a nice cheesesteak on the way, so it was all good fun. Me, you, Brian came with us, Chris. BK Chris came with us as well. Good fun. Thanks to everybody for coming out. Did you get some sleep after you got back?
I did. Those were some good shows, though.
They were.
Got to do more live podcasts. It was fun as hell.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a whole different vibe when you do it in front of a live audience. And by the way, that show we will be putting out very shortly. So I know there were some problems. It was on my end, but it's all resolved, and we got the audio recording of it, so we will be putting that out shortly. You'll get your episode Friday live from Philadelphia, yeah, so good fun. So what have you been doing since Philly, Rob?
Nothing too exciting, you know.
Just regrouping.
Just the typical weekend after that. Couple mics, ate some edibles, walked around, watched the fights. Fights were great.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Good fights. What you did you watch the
I haven't watched the Felder one yet, which
oh,
I will.
You're talking MMA
fights. I'm talking the boxing fight.
Yeah.
That was great, dude.
I did not I didn't watch the whole thing. I watched like three rounds and then the finish.
What happened after round three?
I just didn't have time to. I just was busy and I watched the UFC fights, and then, you know, I got a kid and shit, and then I just like on the computer saw like some highlights. And there was one, they had like the first three rounds posted. Don't get mad at me. I don't believe in IP. Anyway, so I watched that. But I was surprised by how much Wilder got handled from what I saw of it, at least. Anyway, I thought there was a good shot he was going to lose that fight. I thought he was technically the worst boxer of the two, but like, he's got that fucking scary knockout power. If he fucking connects with you, he can knock you out. Although evidently he can knock you back into life too, judging by the first fight. But, whew, yeah, he got fucked up. Yeah,
you don't usually
bad.
See that much, especially in the heavyweights, where people are really just making contact and connecting, and it got exciting. Especially you saw a body shot knockdown.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see that too often. And then his strategy worked perfect. We're just giving him no space to get that hand off, resting his weight on it. It was fun.
Yeah. No, it was.
And he licked his blood off his neck, dude.
Yeah, that was fucking weird. That was oof. That was that's intimidating right there. Like anybody who will do that, you're just like, I just don't want to fight you.
Like a lizard tongue, like too. It just came out, and he really liked the taste of that blood.
Yeah, he sure did. It's a man who loves his work. He does what he loves. And anyone who's comfortable licking your blood off of your body is not someone you want to fight. That's somebody you want to be friends with.
But
or maybe just not know.
Yeah. But it's definitely a guy who, it should be a professional fighter. That's the right job for that guy.
Yeah. No, otherwise he would have just been the weirdest guy, laying brick or whatever.
Like someone gets cut and he's just running over. Ooh, let me lick it.
Dude, come on, man. What did we talk about? They got to call him into the office again. Tyson, listen. We love you. You do great work. But this licking blood thing is really, it's weirding out your coworkers. And it's got to stop. And he's like, look, fire me if you have to, but I love to lick blood, and I'm not. Anyway, he did the right thing. He got into the right career. He's making tens of millions of dollars now and licking blood, and it just looks cool and badass. Anyway, congrats to him. Did you watch any of the UFC fights?
A tiny bit, but not. I didn't watch the whole fight. I watched a little bit of the highlights.
I'll tell you, Paul Felder's post-fight speech got me choked up.
Yeah. Well.
It was fucking, oh, man. I really am just a pushover since I've been a father now. But he was like, he goes, that might be my last fight. He goes, I got a 4-year-old little girl who misses me when I go away for these things and go to training camp. I might be done. He started crying when he said it. And I was like, just hang him up, Paul. Just go be with your kid, man.
I got to say, what I love about Tony Ferguson is he has what I call the sickness, which is there's nothing else in his life. He loves fighting. Mm-hmm. Even if he wasn't at the top of the rank, that guy, he lives for it. He doesn't care about his family. I don't even think he exists in our reality. He sometimes gets mixed up. That's why he's got to go back to mental hospitals. He's got one track, and that's I'm a pro fighter, and I want to be champion.
Yeah.
Some of these other guys, I mean, kudos to them. They're fun to watch. Like Ben Askren was that way. He wanted to be champion. He wasn't a pure fighter because once that was out of the cards, he's like, all right, there's no reason to do this. Seeing that a little bit with Paul Felder, where it's not like Donald Cerrone, where he wants to be in it because he loves to fight.
Well, he's like successful as a commentator and other stuff now. And yeah, I think that does make it harder. You got to fucking be real focused on this shit. It's not a fighting is not a game to have one foot in and one foot out of. That's a rough one. Unlike podcasting, where you can really just dip your toes in and half-ass it. Fighting, you want to be there. Like if I have a bad podcast, you know, some people might be like, that show sucked, but I'm not separated from my senses in front of the entire country.
Yeah,
that just seems worse.
And as much as bombing sucks, it's not like you walk out with a limp and a concussion. You're like, I really should have trained.
You don't walk out. Imagine that, just going out on a stretcher. Like, I should write more. that would add some higher stakes to the whole thing. All right. So there is a whole mess of stuff going on that we haven't talked about on the podcast, and it is. I am really enjoying the state of politics in America right now. It's a little bit scary. It's so funny. It's so reminiscent of 2016 because it's like a little bit freaky. You're like, what the fuck is going on here? But it's also, if you really hate the establishment, it is fun and exciting. And the maybe, you know, and I think we talked about this on the Live for Philly episode a little bit, but maybe the most interesting thing of 2016 and the Trump moment, and it still to me is the most interesting thing about Donald Trump. And this is what's crazy when you see all of these like opinion pieces and all of these like you know, pundits on TV, and like you'll still see, you know, Brian Stelter, our favorite little piggy on CNN, will still be there, and he'll be like, Trump lied 41 times at the State of the Union, or you know, like Trump only cares about his own ego, or Trump blah, blah. And you're like, are you still finding that interesting? This is just the most boring part of the story. It's like, yes. And granted, like Trump will lie and he'll say things, you know, and yes, obviously he's an egomaniac and all of this shit. But come on, we all knew this right away. What's so much more interesting, and what was really interesting in 2016 wasn't, like, very quickly it became not even that story about Trump. It became like people's reactions to Trump. that was what was so interesting. Like the way the mainstream media would deal with him, and just the way so many left-wing people just kind of fell apart and like went crazy. And then the way the neocons dealt with him and all of these, like the reaction that he triggered from all of these people was really much more fascinating, at least to me. And that's kind of the same thing that's happening with Bernie Sanders right now. It's the reaction that he is triggering from all of these establishment people is amazing to watch. You know, it's like, you know, just to use the fighting analogy, like a lot of times, like a lot of fighting, because we were just talking about it, is getting your opponent to move in the way that you want him to, setting traps for your opponent, getting them, you know, and whether or not Trump or Bernie Sanders is doing this intentionally, it does seem like they're almost in effect laying down these traps where you get your opponent to expose themselves. You know what I mean? Like you want your opponent to overextend themselves and then they're wide open to be like, well, look at these guys. I mean, like, look what they're doing. And I see this all over the place. It's also crazy. And I know you know, it's hard not to kind of repeat myself on some of this stuff, but it's just so crazy to me that there's so much of this stuff that we saw months and months and months ago that now is just like coming out like, oh, I guess this is really Bernie Sanders' race to win. I guess that the Democratic base is really closer to Bernie Sanders than they are to fucking Michael Bloomberg. Like, wow, who would have seen that coming? How did you not see this coming? But the reality is setting in. Bernie Sanders won the Nevada caucus, and he didn't just win that thing. He dominated the Nevada caucus. And now we are 1 week out from Super Tuesday, and everything couldn't be situated in a better way for Bernie Sanders. I mean, I guess theoretically they could have not had that Iowa debacle and he could have gotten the outright victory there, you know, but even with that, it's like he got the most votes. He basically got a tie for the delegates, maybe one delegate less than Mayor Pete, a guy who has no shot. Joe Biden has tanked. Michael Bloomberg enters as the establishment candidate, puts on the worst performance you could imagine at that debate, just the worst debate I've ever seen anyone have. And now we're going into Super Tuesday with everybody damaged. And it was almost like the perfect scenario for Bernie Sanders, where you've got, like, if he could have orchestrated it better, have Elizabeth Warren take out Mike Bloomberg, have this chick who has no chance of winning take out your only opponent who had a chance, just because he has the money to spend for it. They're taken out. You got Mayor Pete and Amy Klobuchar battling over here. Joe Biden just being quiet and old and creepy. And you're just kind of sitting there like, I think healthcare should be a right. Oh, yeah. How is that popular in the Democratic Party? Yeah. Everybody else is like, we should cover more people. And he's like, I think we should cover all of them. All right. There's your contrast. He has your values, but more. You know, like that's just the optics of it. So it's been really interesting. So I wanted to play a couple clips of big mainstream media figures or big establishment Democrat figures talking about the Bernie Sanders Nevada win and see what is revealed through all of this and where their mentality is at this point. So the first clip that we're going to play is from James Carville. You know him, Rob? He's like the fucking, the weird guy who was, he was Bill Clinton's campaign manager in 1992.
Was he the one that was saying that, I read this somewhere that the reason why Bloomberg's running is just to try and get the contested elections that Hillary can show up.
I don't know if he, was he the one who said that? I did see that somebody was saying that. I don't know. There's something interesting about that theory, but
Bloomberg really owes him a favor then.
Look, this is what I was saying at the Philly live podcast too. It's just so reminiscent of 2016, where once Donald Trump was dominating the primary process, there were right around this time, like right around, you know, the third primary or two caucuses in a primary, like right around this time going into Super Tuesday, where they're still kind of like, well, maybe we could take this to a contested convention and then we could slip this in. And there was talk of Mitt Romney coming back, you know, the previous nominee, and getting the nomination. They have all these plans. But before long, you realize that you're to do this, you're doing this with the goal of what? maintaining the establishment's grip of control over this party. But you start to realize that this move guarantees you lose the party altogether. It guarantees it. That Bernie Sanders supporters are not going to show up for somebody who ripped the nomination away from him like this. It's not going to happen. And I think it just seems to be more clear to me now. At least the odds are. I'm not saying this is a guarantee, but certainly the very strong odds, 70%, something in that ballpark, that they're going to realize they just have to give this thing to Bernie Sanders, that it's their only option, that they're just not going to have another option the same way they did with Donald Trump. Okay, so here's James Carville on Bernie Sanders in Nevada.
Conversation with James Carville. First of all, James, I am more than familiar with the very formidable guys at Endymion down the street. Yeah. So thank you for that mention. Secondly, go back. You just made the point very clearly that this race has, on the Democratic side, a clearly defined front runner. That front runner is Bernie Sanders. Ergo, correct. What? What should that mean? What happens now?
Can you just pause for 1 second?
Well,
that guy used to be on Crossfire, right?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't he end up doing something really weird out in Afghanistan?
I'm not sure.
I thought he ended up doing something like bordering on being the lobbyist for like the Taliban or something.
Oh,
like, that's
possible. He's James Carville. I mean, just so you know who you're dealing with.
Great and old
here,
school, though.
Is the huh?
Great and old school.
He was pretty solid in old school. He debated Will Ferrell and lost. James Carville. Is like the ultimate, you know, political animal insider. Like this is a, you know what I mean? Like that guy. And then Brian Williams was the, you know, ultimate corporate press stooge, like their number one guy. You know, he was the host of, what was it? Nightly News on NBC for a long time till he got caught being an open liar. He got a little bit too out of control and was just telling completely made up stories to brag about his experience with the military. So you have two professional liars, but very, very, very kind of made guys, professional liars, like real deal, you know, creatures of the establishment. And this is their conversation about this stuff. So let's keep playing.
We're going to see a complete change in tenor on Monday night. If we don't, then our field is really dumb. I mean, but Bernie Sanders is the issue. Anytime you become the front runner, I remember when we were the front runner in 92, we got all the heat, as we should. The New York Times wrote a Whitewater story, didn't get a single fact right, but at least they tried to cobble something together like they had a role to play in this. And we're plunging ahead. Meanwhile, the ABC Washington Post poll comes out. Buttigieg is plus 17 against Trump with college-educated women. And Sanders is at 2. These are the kinds of facts that people have to be presented with. We've got to, and I see that 2/3 of the Nevada caucus goers really want to win the election. I don't know if us in
Brian,
the media are sufficiently telling people what are the risks that you run.
Okay, I don't know when he became a trailer park gym teacher.
Oh, this is like his gimmick.
Was he always like this?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he was like articulate. This is like, I say.
This is the weird thing about him. Everyone in the like corporate press pretends he's smart, and he just comes out and says this like nonsense.
I have no idea what the hell he's saying.
Yeah. It's really, really
weird. I just
hear
Foghorn Leghorn.
But yeah, no, you're not hearing wrong. But there are some interesting things that come out of the conversation if you can decipher his fucking intense weirdness.
Okay.
All right, guys, let's take a second and talk about our brand new sponsor, which is Amigo. Amigo creates life-changing bidets that are incredibly easy to install. You don't need to get a new toilet. You don't need to call a plumber. All you have to do is attach Amigo's seat to your old toilet, and you have your own luxury bidet. They sent one to our studio, and in 15 minutes, we installed it. Everyone here is smiling a lot more. It really is. This is life-changing. You guys got to check this out. It's a whole new way. You feel cleaner than you've ever felt before. You feel like you've been a dirty bum for your entire life. Hey, no pun intended. And you guys got to check this out. It can instantly turn your toilet into a heated seat bidet by getting an Amigo. Think about it. You wash your hands, you wash your hair, all with water, right? So why not treat your butt with the same respect, especially since it probably needs it more than any of those other parts that we discussed. Plus, a bidet will stop you from walking around with an itchy butt all day. And hey, let's be honest, we've all been there, and it's not the greatest. You have to check them out. They start at only $69. This is super affordable and really easy to install. It's life-changing. You have to check it out. You'll use this every day. You and your partner or anyone at your place will be impressed. Keep 2020 going with a better bathroom experience. Check out myamigo.com/gas. That's myomigo.com/gas to get 15% off your order. Check it out, myamigo.com/gas. All right, let's get back into the show. Anyway, let's keep playing.
By doing this, I think voters need to really be appraised of what's going on here. Hopefully these candidates have the skill and are able to do this. We got a week to go before South Carolina, and then 48 hours later, you're at Super Tuesday, and things are going to be happening furious and fast, and we got to gear up for an entirely different race than what you've seen before. The tenor it has changed in this race. The ground has shifted. Strategic imperatives are now different. We're entering a different time, and it's a very compressed and short time that we're in this time frame. So people had better get real. These campaigns better stay up late. They better be thinking about how they're going to put forward what they're about, how they're going to deal with the debate, how they're going to allocate the, scarce media resources. And some people are just not going to make it for very long, and that's just the nature of presidential politics. So we got a lot of news here coming up next week. I promise you, a lot.
James, you just mentioned the risk. Talk about, define risk in your view, and talk about down ballot races under a Sanders nominee.
Right. Well, first of all, I won't mention names, but I get any number of calls from panicked congressional incumbents. I know what's happening out there. I got a real good idea. The entire theory that by expanding the electorate, increasing turnout, you can win an election is the equivalent of climate denial. All right. When people say that, they're as stupid to a political scientist as a climate denier is to an atmospheric scientist. So whatever you do, if you want to vote for Bernie Sanders because you feel good about his program, because you don't like the banks on Wall Street or you don't like pharmaceuticals, that's completely legitimate. I understand that. If you're voting for him because you think he'll win the election, because he'll galvanize heretofore sleepy parts of the electorate, then politically you're a fool. And that's just a fact. It's no denying it. There's so much political science. There's so much research on this that it's not even a debatable question. And if people are appraised of this and they know that and they want to do it as Democrats, that's their own business. But I don't think that they have all of the facts that they need before they make this judgment going forward.
James Carville's Nicole Wallace. You're describing what sounds a lot like political suicide. And I think we need a psychologist to understand that. I want to.
Okay, that actually wasn't the part of the clip that I wanted to play. Damn it.
But that's interesting at the end. Is that accurate that basically whatever the percentage of the population that votes, that's the percentage that votes. You have to win over those people and try and appeal to any other demographic. They're not showing up no matter what. Is that accurate?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's accurate, but it's an interesting perception. It's an interesting belief that these kind of like establishment people have that basically we live in a country where only about half, you know, ballpark, but about half of the eligible people who can vote, vote. And if you're counting on getting the other half, they're like, that's just ridiculous. You can't count on having them. But doesn't that kind of blow up the whole idea of democracy anyway? It's like, oh, so you don't have, if you're saying that like you need some like majority consensus to govern, the truth is that nobody ever has that. This is a big thing that never comes up in American politics, that no president ever has a majority of the people. They never do. Like even when you have these like landslide victories, like Reagan in his reelection won like I think 48 states or 49 states or something like that. This landslide victory, he still came away with like I think in the high 20% of the American voters like actually voted for him and like that. So you always have a situation.
And that's just 20% of the voters.
Well, or no, 20% of the
total population.
of the voting eligible population. Oh, okay. So not children and stuff like that. You know what I mean? But it's like, oh, really? None of them ever have it. There's so many people who just are disconnected from this whole fucking system and don't participate. And I don't know what the political science is to back up the idea that this is impossible to get those people out. But it's interesting that it just rarely comes up that these other people exist who don't even participate in this system. Now, I don't know. I mean, they are operating, you know, the reason why I'm very skeptical of this is that this is kind of the same thing that everyone said about Donald Trump. This was the exact same take of all of the like moderate Republicans on Donald Trump. Well, Donald Trump can't possibly win because he can't get other people to come out, and there's no way he's going to increase the size of the electorate. I mean, that just can't happen, you know? And then he went on in the Republican primary to win more votes than anyone else has ever in the Republican primary. And I don't know, maybe Bernie Sanders can't do it, but the idea that he can't increase voter turnout to some degree seems to be a weird thing to just write off, like as a physical impossibility. It cannot happen. It's like climate denial, you know, whatever that old stupid shit is. But anyway, so I thought that was kind of interesting. He also went off about a whole thing about the Russian propaganda angle, which we're going to get back into in a second. But here's another clip that I wanted to play. This one actually is more interesting and is the correct one. That was my fault. But here is Chris Matthews. And again, keep in mind what we talked about a few podcasts ago with Chuck Todd. But this is one of the beautiful parts of this moment. Here's the treatment that Bernie Sanders is getting. Here's Chris Matthews, longtime MSNBC pundit.
What is going on here? And is this any way to pick a nominee?
Well, I don't think so, but it is the way we're picking this one, and it looks like Bernie Sanders is hard to beat right now. I'm with Carville all the way in terms of the dangers of what lies ahead in November. I'm very much aware of them. They're sitting on so much Oppo research on Bernie, what he said in the past about world affairs, how far left he is. I'm not sure how far left he is, but they're going to make the most of that in terms of world politics. They're going to kill him. But I think it's a little late to stop him, and I think that's the problem. By the way, if you look at the pattern, it's dynamic. Bernie won the popular vote in Iowa. He won it again in New Hampshire. It looks like he's going to win it here when they finally get a vote. Bernie's been winning consistently, and I think it's mathematically understandable. Every time we poll, every time Steve and everybody polls, two-thirds of the Democratic vote, two-thirds of people who call themselves Democrats are either liberal or very liberal. All Bernie ever had to do, and he's done it beautifully, is get a majority of that, and he's up to the mid-30s. If you get half of 67, you're into the mid-30s, and that's where he's gotten it a little better. Biden, his only prayer was to consolidate the third of the vote that's moderate and conservative, and he got nowhere near clearing that field, nowhere near. That's put up four ways now. And so with new people coming in, DeVal Patrick came in, he didn't make it. Bloomberg is in, he's probably going to survive a bit longer because of his money. But that field wasn't cleared. The only way Biden could win in that one-third of the vote that's either moderate or conservative is to sweep it. He got nowhere near. Bernie, on the other hand, did his job. He got more than a majority of that 67%. That is the name of the game. It is pretty much over unless that changes. I was reading last night, Brian, I know you're a history guy too. I'm reading last night about the fall of France in the summer of 1940. And the general, Renault, calls up Churchill and says, "It's over." And Churchill says, "How can it be? You got the great."
So, of all the. It's like, I know you're a history guy and I'm a history guy too. And you just go, I wonder what history. Of all the history we have, I wonder what history you're going to compare Bernie Sanders to. What, like Bernie Sanders winning the Democratic primary or being the front runner in the Democratic primary. What bit of history could you compare this to? I mean, what do we have? You know, we've got, you know, I don't know. We've been, you know, modern humans for 150,000 years. We've had civilization for at least a few thousand, you know, at least several hundred years of like, you know, Western post-Enlightenment history. I wonder what history you would compare. But oh, yeah, the Nazis. Oh, yeah, that's right. It's the fucking Nazis. It's just like the Nazis when the Nazis took Paris. It's every single time. It's the only lens that any of these people can see anything through. It's like bad equals Nazis. They were the only bad ones of all time. You know, it's fucking hilarious, by the way, is that you can't. I mean, if you're gonna compare Bernie Sanders to some evil movement of the 20th century, why can't you pick the commies? I mean. He was, after all, a commie sympathizer. Why do we have to pick the Nazis every fucking time? It's really, you know, by the way, it reminds me of, I remember talking about on the show before, but when people would always say like, Antifa are the real fascists. They'd always call them fascists. And I'm like, well, I mean, they're walking around with hammer and sickle signs. Can we call them communists? I mean, isn't that more accurate? Like, they would probably agree that was more accurate. And by the way, the communists killed way more people than the Nazis did and took over way more fucking countries. Like, why does it always have to be this one? And of course, there's a lot of reasons for that. But I, you know, I probably think the most obvious one is just that, you know, the Nazis lost the war and the winners of wars write history books. And so they get written up as they're always the ones. But anyway, here's one more example. And there are calls. It was like trending fire Chris Matthews after it was trending to fire Chuck Todd. People are really pissed off about this. And a lot of the Bernie supporters are. And rightfully so. Rightfully so. That they're just literally just so nonchalantly with no, and nobody, like, it's always like a thing where someone will say this when talking to another, you know, person on the news, like Chris Matthews is being interviewed there and like these, and they'll just kind of throw it out. And no one there goes, shouldn't we not compare them to Nazis? I mean, isn't that a little bit unfair to, isn't that a little extreme to do? And, there's none of it, none of it. It's just like, hey, here's a Nazi comparison. And I got to say that a lot of times you start to wonder, and it's not, you know, like I'm as guilty of this as anybody else is. But when you get kind of obsessed with the day to day political events, like what happened in Nevada and what's going to happen in South Carolina, and it's hard sometimes to kind of keep your eye on the larger themes, the bigger picture, and what's really, like, what effect is this going to have? And I wonder. And I'm somewhat optimistic in a way about this, but I wonder what effect it's going to have on a lot of these, say, Bernie Sanders supporters who feel however you feel about Bernie Sanders. And there's a lot of shit we don't like about Bernie Sanders. We've done many episodes in the past tearing Bernie Sanders apart. And I have a feeling we're going to have several more in the future, the way things are looking right now. But what's it like if you're one of these, like, young people who supports Bernie Sanders? And you're not, you know, maybe like up on all the history. You're not, what you're basically supporting is, like, I don't know, you're fucking, you know, you probably don't have a great understanding of economics, but you're like, yeah, healthcare should be a right and the minimum wage should be raised and college, you know, public universities should be tuition free or some shit like that. You know, that's appealing to you, which there's millions of people who fall into that category. And then you see Chris Matthews constantly and Chuck Todd and these guys over and over again calling you Nazis. Or at least comparing you to Nazis. What effect does that have on you and the way you're going to look at the corporate press for the rest of your life? Because I'll tell you, there's a whole lot of Trump supporters who that really had an impact on them. Like, it really had an impact when they are simply putting on a hat that says "Make America Great Again," kind of saying, like, Trump will be like, you know, America first. Or, you know, and you know, we should, you know, whatever, we should control illegal immigration or whatever the stuff that Trump was saying is. And they go, yeah, that sounds good to me. And then they're like, well, you're a Nazi. And they're like, whoa, my own, like, you know, countrymen will call me a Nazi for, you know, like, whatever, from their perspective, just like trying to make America great, put America first.
It's kind of like shame is not a great persuasive technique. If anything, you just kind of remove yourself from that source because you don't want to feel bad about yourself.
And it's a little bit more than shame. I mean, this is like slander. You know what I mean? Not just shame, but like like a true attack. I mean, Hillary Clinton called them deplorables, irredeemable. That's a serious thing to launch at somebody.
It's like the opposite. I mentioned this to you before the show. But you got to go watch Trump. He's out in India. And if I was in the South, I'd feel like I was cheated on because now he's telling the Indians how great they are. They're like, I thought we were the great ones. But seriously, it's exactly like what you see at these American rallies. Trump's just out there, football stadium full of Indians. And he's just like, you guys, you're going to be the biggest and best economy. And what you guys have done over here and the jobs that are going to exist over here. Exactly. But he's just praising them. And so they're sitting there and they're clapping, but you can kind of just see the persuasive technique versus CNN, which is they're trying to, like, you know, or like you said, but to me it's like they're kind of trying to shame you, like, how can you possibly support this guy? He's a communist, or you're a Nazi, or
no. And by the way, I'm not disagreeing, they are shaming them. I was just saying that it's that plus, it's shaming plus,
and that doesn't work. It's what you're saying, you're going to turn these people off from your network forever, because when they realize, oh, this network doesn't reflect my values and they're actually calling me shitty, well, fuck them.
And I wonder, if, and maybe this is, I'm not saying I think this will happen, you know, I don't know, but I kind of wonder if maybe this would go to the next step, which I've speculated on before, but what is it when MSNBC is calling all of the Trump supporters Nazis, and then you're a Bernie supporter and they're calling you Nazis? At any point, do you start to go like, oh, well, maybe that, you know, like maybe it was unfair to call them Nazis too. Like maybe this is all a little bit ridiculous that anybody we don't like, we call Nazis in this country. I mean, like, I find this so strange. I remember when Milo was on Legion of Skanks, and that this term Nazi, and I'm, you know, I have like a unique perspective on this to some degree, because, you know, I like, and you too, because like we're fucking Jews in America, and Jews are very aware, I think personally, sometimes too aware and hyper focused on the Holocaust and like what happened. I think it's not the best, you know, way. It's like if you were like,
because every time you walk into a Jewish house, they're like, hey, have you been fed yet? They might take away the food. Eat some more food. Are you hungry?
Well, that part is a little bit
that's a
overwhelming.
Real thing, by the way.
Yes, it is. But it also is that, like, if you talk to Israelis, if you talk to New York Jews, I mean, I guess I just named the only two places where Jews are. But it is unbelievable how, like, tattooed into the Jewish memory this Holocaust thing is. And okay, I get part of that for sure, right? Like if you were almost fucking exterminated systematically by some evil regime that rose up, I could certainly understand this being traumatic and staying with you. But at a certain point, when you start to view everything through this lens, it's almost as if, like, the way I look at it is kind of like Jews in America right now are like outrageously successful. I mean, they're like 2% of the population. They're you know, very overrepresented in lots of different fields. They're doing very well. And it's almost as if you were in a bad relationship 7 relationships ago, and now you're in a really great relationship, and you keep – everything has to be viewed through what happened to you 7 relationships ago. And at a certain point, if you want to be healthy, you'd almost be like, hey, I think you need to kind of drop that. And okay, it's horrible this happened to you, but like, I don't know that this is healthy to be so obsessed over this.
If Irish
people never shut up about the potato famine, at a certain point you might be like, dude, there's a fucking KFC down the block. Like, you're fine now.
I think it's a little bit generational that, I mean, already I don't care as much about it as my parents, but like,
sure.
I know the families, like, that the grandparent was a Holocaust survivor, and I knew that person. Now they're mostly dead, but like, a bunch of my friends, their parents were Auschwitz survivors, and that grandparent had a different vibe than their parents, and then their kids already have a different vibe about it.
Sure.
So that's going to fade away because as you get further away from it. But like, I mean, the people who are literally there, I mean, you're affected. And if you're raised by those people, it's like there's some creepy shit just because they're scarred.
No question about it. Hey guys, let's take a quick second and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Mudwater. If you're looking for a coffee alternative, you have to check out Mudwater. I tell you, it's a superior product. Unlike coffee, which just has caffeine, Mudwater has a powerful blend of all natural ingredients to keep you energized and focused. Lion's mane, chaga, reishi, cordyceps mushrooms. These mushrooms have been a part of Chinese medicine for over 2,000 years. Google any one of them and you'll see a ton of health benefits come up. They enhance energy, mood, and focus. They have cacao, chai, turmeric, cinnamon to help suppress sugar cravings. Just a lot of really good stuff in there. So instead of getting like this kind of jittery thing where you crash like you get with coffee, it gives you a positive energy that actually lasts. If you try this, you can actually feel all of those high quality ingredients and the effect it has on your mood. It doesn't taste like mud, by the way. It tastes amazing. You can add their coconut milk plus MCT oil for a mud latte, almond butter for a mud shake, and of course, ice to replace those expensive iced coffees. With Mudwater, you can have it all in one cup. So go to mudwater.com/POTP. That's MUDWTR.com/POTP. And if you use the promo code DRINKMUD, you'll get 15% off your order. One more time, that's MUDWRT.com/POTP and use promo code DRINKMUD for 15% off your order. All right, let's get back into the show. But anyway, it does seem like I was saying when Milo was on the show and so many and it's just like Nazi. Like, what? I mean, have your criticisms of Milo, but calling him a Nazi just seemed to me to be so like a couple like dumb. Number one, just really dumb. Like there's no like thought put into this at all. It's just bad guy Nazi. It's also like this idea that if you're accusing him of being racist, that's a very different thing than accusing someone of being a Nazi. And those things seem to be interchangeable to a lot of like the kind of outrage people. And it seems to me that everyone got called racist for so long that that just didn't have the bite to it anymore. And then Nazi was like a more effective, you know, like thing. And then I guess, you know, whatever, like 150 people went to Charlottesville and 15 of them had swastikas. So that was like the proof that everybody's a Nazi and now we don't need, you know, and which also seems really dumb to me. But, you know, like Nazis were a very specific thing and they were a very like specific and very unique and very evil movement that captured Germany and then parts of Europe in the 1930s and early 40s. Or I guess by the 40s, they were already losing more than they won. You know, it's like, okay, well, maybe not. The first couple of years they were doing all right. But like, okay, it's like the German Workers Socialist Party, like, all right, there's that thing. And then racist could just be like, you know, like your uncle who's like, you know, thinks that like, I don't know, like he doesn't want Puerto Ricans at the swimming pool down the block or something. It's like he's not a Nazi, you know, like they're very different things. But anyway, to just watch these guys doing this to Bernie Sanders, it's interesting that you're kind of like, wow, so you guys are really, and I don't know if they've completely thought this through, but you're flirting with losing this huge chunk of the left in America. And I don't know if they realize, it's like, do you guys go on Twitter? Do you see that it's trending every time after you call them this? It's indefensible. What is the comparison that Chris Matthews could possibly be making to the fucking French being invaded by the Nazis and Bernie Sanders winning the Nevada caucus? Like, what? These things are like, I mean, it's such a stretch to push those two things together. I mean, okay, so here's the comparison. Both events had one side winning and another side losing. So it's just like that, right? This is something to watch, and it's really something to behold in a way. You know, like I remember Pat Buchanan wrote a really great article about this. Back when it was like around, man, if I was guessing, it's probably be around like October or September of 2017. So right before the election between Trump and Clinton. And it, you know, it looked like there was a very good chance that Hillary Clinton was going to win the presidency. And he was kind of thinking about, he was just speculating about like kind of the same thing I'm asking with the Bernie Sanders people now. But he was like, what does this do for the future of these people? Like, so let's say Trump loses and he goes away and Trump's irrelevant from here out and Hillary Clinton's president. What about those people who just wanted to build a wall and were called Nazis for that? We're called by the woman who's going to be president now, irredeemables and deplorables. How do they fit into this fold that is the United States of America? And that's an interesting question. This is the question Jordan Peterson asked on Real Time with Bill Maher, if you remember, and a panel of like liberal pundits had no idea. Like it really seemed like they hadn't even thought about this. And Jordan Peterson, I don't know if you guys remember, this was like a year or two ago when he was on, and he goes, okay, so you guys all don't like Donald Trump. You want to get rid of him. You want him impeached or you know, not to get reelected. Okay. But maybe you should ask yourself about all of the people who support him. How do they ever get back in the fold? Like, how do they get back into this? And one of the things that I haven't really seen before, at least in my lifetime, I don't really remember this happening in politics, is that there does seem to be this this thing with Trump and now with Bernie Sanders. There's so many parallels to these guys just taking over the party. And obviously, Bernie still has a ways to go, and Trump was able to do it. And it's not a certainty, but it's looking good for Bernie. But it's not just that they're going after those guys. I mean, they go after them for sure, but there seems to be a real intense hatred for their supporters as well. Now, the original Chuck Todd clip that we played, it wasn't an attack of Bernie Sanders. It was an attack of Bernie Sanders supporters. The Hillary Clinton deplorable comment wasn't an attack of Donald Trump. It was an attack of his supporters. And that's a different thing. I mean, it's only slightly different, but it's a meaningful difference. When you're not just attacking the guy, you're attacking his supporters. Now, that may not be that big of a deal if you're somebody who's got, you know, like 10,000 people supporting you. But if you're somebody who's got 10 million people supporting you, that's a very different thing. You're now like saying that there's a whole chunk of this country that are like bad people. And I remember in 2016, look, like I just try to be fair about this. Like there's almost two very different aspects to this podcast, and I try to do both of them. You know, I try, like, one, I'm a super opinionated guy who's a believer in my philosophy. Like I believe in liberty and the non-aggression principle and private property and all of that stuff, right? Very passionately. And I never claim to be neutral on any of these issues. But then I also try to just analyze what's going on in the world from a kind of like, you know, a perspective of trying to be accurate and seeing what's actually happening, you know, for what it is. And, you know, you kind of go back and forth between the two. And you never completely separate one from the other because we're a fucking human being. But, you know, I try to compartmentalize them when I can. And so I'm just saying for my opinion, I've got a lot of things that I don't like about Donald Trump, a lot of issues he was talking about in 2016 that I was like, I think he's dead wrong on all this stuff. I mean, the obvious ones that jump out are just like, I mean, you know, his tariff and trade stuff was a huge part of his platform in 2016. And I think he's basically dead wrong about that stuff, you know, Bernie Sanders, I mean, come on, like every issue that is his bread and butter issue, pretty much, I think he's wrong about. You know, and then there are some issues that I like about both of them. But, you know, broad strokes, neither of them are like my guy. But you can kind of see what's going on here. I mean, you can try to observe in reality what's actually happening. And Donald Trump in 2016, you realized like, oh, there's this huge group of people who agree with this guy and like what he's saying. And then as I was getting to, the response would be to attack those people. And I tried, even though he wasn't my guy, I didn't vote for him. I never, you know what I mean? I'm not going to vote for him in 2020. He's not my guy. But I tried to be fair in judging like what they were saying about these people. And this part of this was before you were on the show, because I remember doing episodes about this with Mike Brancatelli back in the day. But if you remember, there would be in 2016, there were all of these attacks on the Donald Trump supporters. And I would talk about this a lot on the show and go, you know, I don't know. I'm not like lockstep with a lot of these supporters. I'm surprised. I wish that Ron Paul saying end the Fed and, you know, like shit like that got as much of a support as saying build the wall did. You know, I like that would be, if I had my druthers, that would have been the message that rallied this entire group together. But then you would see, I remember talking about this one conversation that just stuck out with me where I was talking to this like left wing young comedian, like a newer, you know, a newer guy. Who I don't even know. I don't know if I've even seen him since then. But we were talking outside the old Stand Comedy Club. And he said to me something that I had heard many times before. And he said, the real thing that I hate about Donald Trump is that he gives rise to the worst elements of our country. Like his supporters are like the worst people in this country. And I remember saying I had heard that a lot.
College-educated white women.
Yeah.
People that voted for Obama.
Well,
know?
Right. Yeah, really. I mean, those. But I said to him, I go, well, is it true that Trump supporters are the worst people in America? Like, they're the worst?
Farmers, and I just said, Christian conservatives, people that don't live in New York or California.
I'm not against shitting on them at times or making fun of them or anything like that. Like everybody, I'm an equal opportunist comedian, and I think everybody can be insulted and made fun of. And like, sure, if you want to make fun of like the NASCAR Miller Lite drinking guy in the middle of the country or whatever, go for it. You know, like I don't mind that. But is that guy the worst person. And I said to this kid, this left-wing comedian, I said, so those are the worst people in America? I go, well, how about like the gangbangers in Chicago? And this was at the time, it was like there was crazy violence going on in Chicago. I think it's a little bit better now. Still not great. But I was like, how about those people, you know, who are like fucking, you know, just murdering people, assaulting people, fucking, you know, whatever, you know, abandoning their families. But like, you know, just an example. How about them? Are they a worse element of our society than Trump supporters? And he goes, well, I actually don't think that, you know, gangbangers who have like been oppressed by the system are worse than, you know, like a Trump supporter, like a white guy who's racist and blah, blah, blah. And then it's like the left wing spin comes in where it's like, no, actually, because white and racist is the worst thing that you can be. That's actually worse than murderer, who we can, if we're talking about gangbanger murderer, we can start to find excuses for them. But if we're talking about Trump supporter, then there's no excuses. And that really was irredeemable, deplorable. Like, that's how they look at it.
Gangbangers mostly kill other gangbangers. They're helping clean up the mess.
Listen, I'm not going to lie. There is somewhat of an argument there. And if you look at cops as a gang, maybe they're all just doing us a decent favor there. But, my point there was just like, I don't think this is fair to say that they're the worst element of our society. I've met a lot of Trump supporters who I think are kind of, you know, cool people. Some of them are good. Some of them are bad. You know what I mean? Like it's a mixed bag, just like anything else. And then I remember there was a big theme. We used to talk about this, and again, when Mike Brancatelli was on the show.
Before you hop into that, I feel like that's such a wonderful piece of propaganda that I forgot. Remember, it gives rise to the worst people in society because racist activities over the last 4 years have been out of control. I mean, the change that we saw in this country of that finally the white racists saw a leader, saw that they had been normalized, marginalized community of people that just wanted to hate, finally got their leader in the White House and came out in droves and really overturned all the racial progress that we've had. I forgot about how much they fucking used to talk about give me one example of that over the last 4 years. Well, you tried to make it out of that Indian story when the little kid was yelling at the Indian who turned out.
Well, there's that. I mean, look, obviously the big one they had is Charlottesville. That's what they would use as like, this was the big example. I mean, the problem with that is that there is really no evidence at all that this led to some bigger movement. They had another rally a year later or whatever it was, and there was like no one came. And it's just like, I don't know, it really turned out to be just like some people on the internet espousing views that you don't like. And, you know, it's fine. You can not like them. I don't like a lot of them. You know what I mean? But like that was more or less what that is. Now, there is
you want to remember the Holocaust. Who else is keeping the swastika alive?
Well, that's right. I mean, it does help. It does help. By the way, it really does help everybody else remember the fucking Holocaust. I wish those swastika people would go away and we could fucking start to move on. But, you know, there's like this thing, like that narrative was so dominant and it came from different angles. Like I remember talking a lot about, if you remember, there was a lot made of the violence at Trump rallies. This was a big, big theme throughout because you would have like one video of a guy getting punched or one other video, you know, like maybe there'd be like three or four incidents in these rallies.
Every sporting event I've ever been to, someone gets drunk and gets thrown out because they pick a fight. Maybe not every event, but like maybe not as much recently.
Oh, that's right.
But I remember more often than not, I remember once going to the Garden for not March Madness, whatever comes before March Madness. They do like that college tournament there. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's like the Big East
whatever it was.
Tournament.
At the end of that, it turned into, oh, look, there's a fight in that corner. And then security gets them. Like it literally turned into a game of like, oh, should I be the guy in my section to start a fight?
There's a stronger argument that like Philadelphia sports are leading to a culture of violence than that Trump rallies were. And I just always thought it was fair to I guess being like a libertarian who like an radical libertarian who's outside of this kind of like this left-right paradigm, outside of the kind of like establishment media operations, because I kind of hate all of that. You'd go, okay, and I think part of the mindset that makes you a libertarian to begin with is this kind of like, well, I want to try to approach this from a logical framework and be consistent, like consistently judge all of these different people. So let me judge them by the same standard and kind of give everyone a fair hearing. By the way, I think this is part of the reason why I've gotten flack in the past, whether it's like, you know, talking, having podcasts with some of the like alt-right guys, or whether it was having podcasts with my friend Owen Benjamin, or having Nicholas Fuentes on the show, like some of these guys, and I get shit for it. And it's like, you know, they're almost like, oh, well, Dave's not calling out racism where he sees it. And look, anyone who listens to this show, you know what my views on this stuff are. Like, I never really hold back. And if, like, if I get something wrong and you want to point it out, fine. But there's, look, okay, this is almost like going off on a tangent, but that's what I do. It's a side. So I was watching this fucking, this trash reality show with my wife the other day. So it's guilty pleasure. I don't do a lot of this, but we were watching this terrible, some garbage reality show. And it was mildly entertaining, I must say. Every now and then I have to put my finger on the pulse of the country. But so there was this couple, and it's like a black woman and a white guy. And they were getting together, and she was introducing him to her father. And she's talking to the camera, and she goes, she was like, my father... She's like, my father, this might be a little bit weird. I'm kind of nervous to introduce this white guy. I've never dated a white guy before and introduce him to my father. And she's like, my father's like a very into like black pride and black issues. And he always wanted black grandchildren. So I think this might be a little bit weird.
You know, but, you genetics, know, they'll still probably be pretty black.
Yeah. And perceived as black for sure, yeah, by society. But anyway, so she says this and then she goes, but he's not racist or anything. So she goes, he cares about black pride and black issues, and he wants black grandchildren, but he's not racist. And by the way, he really wasn't. He wasn't a bad guy. He was a little bit uncomfortable with the situation, but he was like fairly open, and he grilled the guy a little bit, which, you know,
fucking my daughter.
Yeah, a little, just a little bit of that. But it was, but then he was actually like a decent guy about it, and I didn't find that to be racist. I kind of agreed with her. I thought, you know, there's really nothing wrong with what he said, what she said, or what he said. He's a little uneasy with the situation, but ultimately he was a pretty good dude about it. And, you know, so I was talking to my wife about this, and we were kind of just like laughing, but we were like, but could you imagine, like, if a show had a white father saying the same thing? And I know everybody's played these games before, right? But, like, if he said the same thing, if there was some white girl who brought a black guy home and she was like, look, my dad's, like, really into, like, white issues, really cares, he's, like, really pro-white, and he's always wanted white grandchildren. He's not racist or anything, but he just has those views. Now, that guy would be just considered by most people in society just evil, irredeemable, deplorable. But I have this fucking autistic libertarian thing where I have to go like, well, no, look, I'm not, I want to be consistent in my values. So if I'm also going to not judge this guy, then I should also not judge it, or I should judge both of them. But I can't live in this world where I'm like, you know what I mean? Having this like kind of like, you know, hypocrisy within me, like that needs to be resolved. That's the libertarian like conflict almost in life in general. You know what I mean? And we, you see this all over the place with our thinking. And in many ways, I think we're the only group who thinks this way, like the only group. Like it was somebody's like, oh, well, we should have a minimum wage, you know, for this. And you're kind of like, OK, but that's a price control. So if price controls on labor can help the economy, why wouldn't we also want a price control on wheat and steel and all of these other things? And if you're an economist who's telling me you accept that price controls lead to shortages or whatever, then that's going to have the same problem here. Like, I'm sorry, you can't, like, these things have to, like, work logically. So, anyway, to the point I was making, I just try to judge people by a fair standard. And I think when other people are judging people by an outrageously unfair standard, it comes off like your standard is the one that's unfair. It's like, whoa, but you're not condemning this one side. And you're like, but wait, I would have the exact same approach to another side who said this. Like, I promise you, I would have pretty much the exact same type of conversation with a black nationalist that I'd have with a white nationalist. I'd probably ask a lot of the same questions. I'd probably have a lot of the same points of view. I'd be like, hey, I don't really have anything. You know, if you want to go buy some land and only live on there with black people and you don't want white people, okay, yeah, you have a right to do that. You know? Are you going to use violence against white people in order to achieve that? Then I'm going to have a problem with you, and we're not going to be on board with that. Anyway, but so this is how I felt about the Trump supporters. When they were saying there's violence at these rallies, you'd go, eh, well, let's actually dissect this. And then what I would notice, and this was impossible not to notice, is that you'd be like, okay, so there was this guy who got punched at a Donald Trump rally. But, you know, he was wearing a Trump's a Nazi shirt, and he walked into this rally in a Trump's a Nazi shirt. Now, still, no excuse for punching this guy. That guy who punched him should be arrested, should face, but you know, no problem. But at the same time, if there was like a, you know, a Black Lives Matter rally and some white guy walked in with a like fuck Black Lives Matter shirt and he got punched, well, okay, same thing. That guy probably should get arrested. You don't have a right to assault someone over a shirt that you didn't like. But I think we would all also go, who was really provoking this situation? It might have been that guy. You know what I mean? So now I'm just saying, now there's, and then there's super amounts of nuance to all of this. Because if some guy walked into a Black Lives Matter rally and just started asking them questions or just like being, you know, a little bit like, you know, then we'd be like, no, you know what I'm saying? There's always kind of a different level of like where you would stare. It's very nuanced. But I'm not going to judge these Trump supporters on a wholly different level than I would judge another group of people or Hillary supporters or Bernie supporters. And the other thing I started to notice is that you're saying there's like this violence at the Trump rally. But if these people are so violent, why aren't they going to the Hillary Clinton rallies and starting shit? Why aren't they going to the Bernie Sanders rallies and starting this shit? If they're only getting into fights with people who come in to try to heckle and throw things at Donald Trump and all this shit, maybe they just wanted to go to their event and just didn't want, you know what I mean, like other people to be a part of it. It's not like this is a fucking, you know, a public college campus or just a college university or somewhere that's like purporting themselves to be this open place for learning and ideas. They're going to what is a Trump rally. Like that's what they're there for. So I would just start thinking about this and I'd be like, I don't know. And I've just had the experience so many times where the mainstream media is telling you these people are fucking terrible. And then you go look at them and you're like, oh, they're actually not so terrible. They're just outside of your control or outside of your worldview. Hey guys, let's take a second and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Blue Chew. You can pick them up over at bluechew.com. Blue Chew offers men a performance enhancement for the bedroom, and at bluechew.com you can get the first chewable with the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. Chewables can work faster than pills, up to twice as fast. The chewables from Blue Chew can be taken on a full or empty stomach. The online physician consultant is free, so it's cheaper than those other two. It only takes a few minutes to connect with a bluechew.com affiliated physician, and if you qualify, you get prescribed online quickly. That's right, you're prescribed online, so there's no in-person doctor visit, no awkward conversation, no waiting in line at a pharmacy. It ships directly to your door in discreet packaging. The chewables from BlueChew.com are prescribed online by a doctor, and they're made in the USA. BlueChew gives you the confidence in the bedroom every time. You and your partner will love it. And here's a great deal for you guys. If you visit BlueChew.com, you'll get your first order free when you use the promo code PROBLEM. You just pay $5 shipping, but the order is free. That's BlueChew.com, and the promo code is PROBLEM. All right, let's get back into the show. So anyway, where I'm going with all of this is that one of the new attacks on Bernie Sanders has been the Bernie Bros. This came up at the debate. This is something that Mayor Pete was hitting Bernie Sanders for real hard, and that is that the Bernie Bros
are just nasty.
They're nasty people.
They say mean things online.
That's right. They say mean things online. They are sexist. This is the big thing. They go after women. This was a big Hillary Clinton complaint, or not really Hillary as much as the people around Hillary Clinton would complain about this a lot.
And if they say it online, that means they mean it in real life. They would say it to your face. They would actually do those things. That's why there's so much violence towards women in this country, because it's not like it's an internet activity.
If there's one thing we've learned, the internet is just people's exact reflections of how they would act.
That's why Bernie should rebuke them. He should tell them, I don't even want your vote anymore.
But this is the new thing now, that they're calling on Bernie to condemn his supporters. And don't get it twisted, like, this is a tactic, and it's a really smart tactic, especially for someone like Bernie Sanders,
because he's the weak. Land of the bitch.
Yes, well, he's weak, and they know he's weak on this. So if they go, well, they're mean to women, you better say something. Now they get it's the same thing as when they would do, I remember Scott Horton, the great Scott Horton, pointing this out, but when they would ask Tulsi Gabbard over and over again if she's going to run third party at the beginning of the presidential campaign. And you realize that this is a tactic, because she said no over and over and over again. And they keep asking you. And the same, they do this with a lot of different people, a lot of different like tactics like this. It's like when they kept asking Donald Trump if he disavowed David Duke's support. Now, he did it over and over again. Like, there's videos of him saying it all over the place. Yes, I don't know David Duke. I don't like David Duke. I don't want his support. I disavow him, blah, blah. But they'd keep asking him this. Because when they keep asking you this question, they get to pose as, I'm just asking you a question. But the question is, well, obviously, this really horrible racist guy supports you. So how do you think about that? I mean, it's 50-50 whether you're going to want to take his support or not. And then even if you say, yes, I disavow, it's like, well, look, Donald Trump had to disavow this horrible racist guy who really likes Donald Trump. Like, it's, you know, like it's this is the tactic that they use. And when they would ask Tulsi Gabbard, are you going to run third party? There's all of these like hidden so let's start just off with an honest question here. I mean, obviously, you can't possibly be the nominee. So do you think maybe you'll try to go be the nominee of another party when you clearly are going to fail at this, which you will? And it's like, that's all hidden in there, but you get to present it. It's like, no, I was just asking her about a third party. It's very kind of sophisticated psychological manipulation. But so that's what they would do. Lots of questions like this. And the Bernie one is a perfect example. So here we're going to put you into a box where first we're going to go, will you disavow the horrible, sexist, awful people who support you? Number one, it poses a question, but what was the information that was in there? A bunch of horrible, sexist people support you. So I don't know what it is about you that all these people support you. And now you have two options. What are you going to do? You can either say sure, in which case you're up there acknowledging that you have horrible, mean, sexist people who, you know, support you, and that now you're disavowing your own supporters. So you're already kind of damaging yourself because these your own supporters, you have to target them. And then, or you could say no, in which case you're basically going like, well, there might be some horrible, mean, sexist people who support me, but I don't disavow them, which also comes off looking pretty shitty. So it's these tactics, and I'm just sitting here asking myself, and again, like the Trump situation I find myself in, trying to judge different groups fairly and consistently, I go, is it true? Is there some truth to this, that the Bernie bros are these racist, horrible people who like tweet all types of mean shit? And I gotta say, just from looking at it, I see zero evidence that this is actually a real thing. I mean, of course, if you're talking about anyone who's got a large following, there's always the internet is the internet. Twitter is a freaking cesspool of just the most outrageous, vile, rancid shit being said all over the place. So anyone who's got a huge following is going to have some of that. But is there any evidence that there's actually more of this with Bernie Sanders? Or is it just that Bernie Sanders people are slinging this shit at CNN and MSNBC and the New York Times? Is that really what the problem is? Because we've seen that all over the place. It's like they're the ones who it's like, you're not allowed to sling shit at me. Like, we can sit here fucking firing bullets at you, but if one comes back our way, you're violent. You know, like, that's the game that they play. So, oh my God, someone on Twitter, you know, is calling, you know, Chris, you know, Chris Matthews, you're a fucking hack. You should be fired tomorrow. But Chris Matthews, it was in response to him getting up there and comparing Bernie to the rise of the Nazis or to the annexation of France of the Nazis or whatever, you know. So it's like, OK, but who's really like the one saying something nasty and inappropriate about the other one here? And Hillary Clinton can call Donald Trump supporters irredeemables and deplorables. And that doesn't seem to garner the same outrage that, you know, some Trump supporter saying mean shit back to her. Now he's sexist because he said it to her. So she can fire these bullets and then hide behind the cover of, oh, I'm just a girl, which is really, if you think about it, the most fucking like anti-women's empowerment position you could take. So that I'm just looking at this and I go, I don't really see any evidence that there actually is a problem of Bernie bros being sexist. This is also similar to when they used to say that Donald Trump is sexist. I'm sure you remember this shit from 2016 when they would say, you know, well, look at the way he went after Megyn Kelly, or look at the way he goes after Hillary Clinton, and look at the way he goes after, you know, remember
Megyn
we did
was bleeding all over the place. What was he supposed to do?
Not call it out?
I mean, it's disgusting. Some sanitary, you know?
Which was. But the truth is, right, that if you actually look at it, and I remember we did this episode a while back with the Baltimore thing with Elijah Cummings, where they were like, well, look at all the people of color Donald Trump goes after. But then we were like, but you can rattle off a list of white people who Donald Trump goes after. So you could rattle off a list of women, men, whites, Browns, blacks, like every group of people. It's Donald Trump. If you say something nasty about him, you could rattle off a group of Fox News hosts who Donald Trump goes after. And it's all the ones who are critical of him. He goes after all of them. He just said some shit about Neil Cavuto the other day. You know, it's like that's how Donald Trump operates. So really, there's no evidence that there's a sexism to this. It's just that he goes at people. Okay, so now you're saying you're not allowed to go at people. Fine, I guess. I mean, I don't agree, but if those are the rules you want to play with. But then you're also not allowed to call him fucking, you know, like the corporate press has called Donald Trump since he's been elected. They've called him a fascist, a Nazi, a sexist, a racist, a guy who is in a conspiracy with a hostile foreign power, a guy who is crazy, mentally unfit to serve. I mean, do I need to keep going on? Like, these are some fairly serious insults or accusations to throw at somebody. So you're allowed to throw all of that at him, but he's not allowed to fire back at you. You remember the thing with Mika Brzezinski when she goes, she made fun of Donald Trump's hands. She goes, oh, look at his hands. They're so teeny. And then he took to Twitter and he goes, the last time I saw Mika Brzezinski, her face was bleeding from her latest facelift. And you're like, oh, okay. And then everyone goes, oh, you're sexist. And you're like, but she basically made a little dick joke about Donald Trump. I mean, that's what she was doing, right? So why is she allowed to make fun of his physical appearance, but he can't knock her back? I just have trouble not applying these things consistently. So if there's a value, then okay, but apply that universally. It can't just be one side or the other. And this Bernie thing to me just smells like a tactic. It simply smells like a tactic. Like I don't see any real evidence. Maybe there's something I'm missing here, but I don't see any real evidence that there is this unique problem of Bernie Sanders supporters being sexist or being horrible online. I think that, you know, what a lot of them call horrible online, you could also call, you know, you could certainly say that there's libertarians who fall into that group too. But really, if you look at it, it's just like we hate the establishment. And they hate the fucking establishment too. So yeah, they're pissed off. And a lot of them are pissed off and airing their grievances online. But that's also kind of true for how Hillary Clinton supporters feel about Trump supporters and Trump. That's true for how Trump supporters feel about Hillary Clinton and them. It's true for how Bloomberg supporters probably feel about Bernie right now, you know? So I just don't... Does anyone actually have to produce any evidence that there is a unique problem with Bernie Sanders here? It seems like the answer is no. And now Bernie has to try to deal with this thing. I actually thought he did a not bad job at the last debate of kind of trying to make that point. That it was like, yeah, okay, there are some people. If they're doing that, I denounce that. Don't do any of that. But, and then he said, and this was kind of smart of Bernie when he made the point, I don't know if you saw it, he goes, you know, there are a lot of women of color on my campaign who have had really vile things said to them. That was smart of him. That was a smart way to try to turn that around and be like, yeah, but hey, black women, right? They're protected. So my black women are getting, you know, insulted. Okay, so what you see happening here, the bigger picture, right? Because that's what I do, Dave Big Picture Smith, is that something very similar to what Trump did to the Republicans in 2016 is happening with Bernie Sanders to the Democrats in 2020. You all but heard James Carville and Chris Matthews admit this. It's too late. You know, we really should be fucking doing everything we can to tear this guy down. The problem is we waited way too fucking late.
The most interesting thing is if you just looked at the numbers, I mean, they just should have been smarter. If their strategist had just kind of consolidated who was running against Bernie, someone probably could have beat him. I mean, essentially, if you took away Amy, Klobuchar, and you took away Biden, then you got Pete, who's basically at pretty similar numbers, too.
I think the problem is they could never figure out who the guy who's going to stay should be.
They all said, hey, we can be it, but they didn't really run the math of, hey, if we divide all of these other people, you're kind of just... And I think maybe they also... Or maybe the math was they thought Elizabeth Warren would do a better job and would better split the Bernie, like that side of the party.
I think
it would be more wide open for a conservative to not need that many. That's probably what they thought.
I think you just nailed it.
Yeah.
I think that they thought, especially when Elizabeth Warren was riding high about 3-4 months ago, I think they thought, don't worry, he won't be able to consolidate this part of the party because Elizabeth Warren will be there competing with him. And that ended up falling apart. But you might be right. I think the real issue is that they were like, well, who can actually do this thing? And more they started to realize Joe Biden wasn't the guy. And then they go, oh, well, who is it? Pete? I mean, he's polling it at 10% nationally with 0% support from African Americans. That's not going to be the guy who does it. And Amy Klobuchar is polling worse than him.
Old Grandma Pants was talking cookie talk without bringing the cookies.
So what you see now, right, is what you see is this dynamic where Bernie Sanders is taking over the party. And in so many ways, so many of the tactics that were thrown at Donald Trump are now being thrown at Bernie Sanders. And the tactics are a multi-pronged attack, okay? So it comes from all directions. It's really crazy how you see this. The parallels are fucking, like, stunning. So you have Hillary Clinton coming out saying Bernie Sanders is a terrible person. He never got anything done. Nobody likes him. Much the same way Mitt Romney came out, the previous nominee, and said, we got to find someone else besides Donald Trump. He can't be the nominee. He's terrible. He's a horrible person. You know, Mitt Romney was a little bit more aggressive, but both the previous nominees coming out saying the front runner can't be the front runner. That's a pretty unique thing. Then you see the attack of his supporters by people in the media. The attack of his supporters. Donald Trump were irredeemable deplorables. Bernie Sanders are Bernie bros who are sexist and hostile and maybe somewhat violent. You know, violent supporters, the same type of thing. But then there's the other element of the attack, which works hand in hand with the corporate press. And this is the next step that Bernie Sanders is going to have to deal with. And that is, of course, the fine men and women, the heroes of the intelligence community. And now that's what Bernie Sanders is going to deal with. So Bernie Sanders was called into a meeting with members of the intelligence community. Basically, the CIA calls Bernie Sanders into a meeting to tell him that the Russians are interfering. Think about this. This is actually, the parallels are just unbelievable. So now we are to believe, without evidence being presented, but just the word of the intelligence community, that the Russians are interfering to help, wouldn't you guess, Bernie Sanders win the Democratic nomination. That there's interference into our election.
Well, I realized he's an even more of a freak show than Trump. So they're like, fuck it. If we're just trying to blow this thing up, let's switch over to this guy. He's even worse.
Well, I suppose so. Now, not only does the intelligence community meet with Bernie Sanders and tell him that the Russians are interfering to help him in the campaign, but then members of the intelligence community also decide to leak this information to the Washington Post so they can run a whole piece on how the Russians are interfering to help Bernie Sanders. Now, isn't that a little bit of a coincidence? And what's really...
You think they'd at least come up with the original play.
Yeah.
You know, like, he just did that, and it didn't work. Is that the only thing you guys really have? It's like if you watch 24, and every season was about the Russians, at some point you'd be like,
well,
what about the Chinese? Or what about people in the Sudan or Muslims? I want some variety here with my villains.
I see where you're coming from. However, I think the other side of that, the other side of that coin, is that they go, well, look, we've got all this money in the bank from pushing Russia interference for so long. And so many people on the left were comforted by this narrative of Russian interference, because then you don't really have to accept that Donald Trump is the president. Everybody loves that. Oh, it's a complete illegitimate thing to begin with. So the left is already bought in it. Do you remember when you watched those polls where even after the Mueller report came out, that it was something like, I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was an outrageously high percentage of Democrats who believed that Donald Trump was in fact in a conspiracy with the Russians and that they had stole the election for him. It's a very hot. So they know all of this stuff. They know there's a lot of Democrats who believe that. And so now it's easy to take all that money in the bank and flip it onto Bernie Sanders. But the crazy thing is that, right, let's say this was real, which, just to be clear, there has never been any compelling evidence that has been presented in any way about the 2016 election that the Russians interfered in any meaningful way. What they've thrown at you is like Twitter bots and Facebook ads. It is absurd. Like, absurd. The idea that even if you targeted Facebook ads, and if you actually look into the details, it comes out to be like $12,000 worth of targeted ads. It's ridiculous. I mean, me and you both know what targeted ads on Facebook are worth. They're worth next to nothing. And the idea that you would just flip someone's vote with a targeted Facebook ad, as if,
and
like
$12,000 worth.
Right. Really. I mean, like, the idea is insane. And also, by the way, it would disprove the whole idea that democracy is a tenable system, because if it's that easy to propagandize someone and flip their vote, then whatever, you know, then how would you rely on them to make good decisions to begin with? But so the CIA, or the intelligence community, right, they leak the fact that they had this meeting with Bernie Sanders. So evidently, this is the story we're to believe, that it was so important that the American people needed to know, right? Like, they went out of their way to leak this, I suppose, you know, classified secret information that Bernie Sanders was being aided, you know, unwittingly, a Russian asset, just like Hillary Clinton called Tulsi Gabbard, unwittingly a Russian, right, asset, wasn't that what she called her? But it's not important enough that they need to give us any of the information of how the Russians are doing it. So once again, it's just, hey, intelligence community here, take my word for it. Take my word. And by the way, I'm going to put this out into the Washington Post, and don't let it fuck with you that it just happens to be, you know, I just happen to be putting this information out right around the time that Bernie Sanders is winning state after state after state. Don't let that fuck with you. I know it's coming out a week before Super Tuesday, but just, you know, go with this. You needed to know this. You don't need to know any of the details. You don't need any evidence. You don't need anything to back this up. But they come out and do this. Now, this is an obvious concerted attack on Bernie Sanders, okay? Just like with all of this other shit, there's really no evidence. Now, there's already been, and this is what starts to happen. It's just like with the whole Mueller investigation thing. There are these huge accusations that are made at the beginning. Everything that looks bad for Donald Trump comes out immediately, you know, like very early on, you hear about pissing on hookers and Moscow towers and meeting at the Trump Tower. And then drip by drip by drip, you find out, well, these were the holes in this story. These were the holes in this story. These were the holes in this story. So it's already come out when they said they go that because another big story that's come out recently is that Trump is working. The Russians are working to get Trump reelected. OK, that's another big thing that's come out. And already now, there's been reports that actually that intelligence was misrepresented to Congress, and that, in fact, there was really no sound evidence that the Russians were working to get Donald Trump reelected, or that they preferred him in any way, just that they had one high-level Russian saying that he's a guy who can make deals, and that was it. And the intelligence community that was meeting with Congress and debriefing them on this seems to have completely misrepresented what the actual intelligence was. Now, again, like with all these things, it's very fuzzy and hazy, and we don't know exactly what's going on or exactly what is really happening. But it there's no perspective given, you know, when they say the Russians are interfering in an election. It could literally mean, like, you know, it's one of these very clever phrases. It's the same with Trump-Russia collusion. It's a very, you know, like, tricky phrase, which is used to manipulate you, because they could go, oh, well, Trump is colluding with the Russians. Now, let's say Donald Trump had a phone call with a Russian talking about what his plans were going to be as president, you know, or something like that. Technically, you could say he colluded with the Russians. But when you say Trump's colluding with the Russians, it gives this impression of something much more nefarious than just like a phone call that like any incoming president would make with a foreign government. And the same thing, as we've talked about many times, when you say interfering in an election, it sounds like you're tampering with votes or you're somehow. But really what you mean by interfering with an election is just maybe putting information out that's damaging toward one opponent, maybe a Facebook ad, maybe a tweet, you know, the bot farm or something like that. Any of these things they'll call interfering in an election. So, okay, if we're going to go with this loose definition of interfering in an election, what exactly do you call intelligence operatives leaking this meeting with Bernie Sanders and the CIA to the Washington Post in the middle of a Democratic primary? I mean, are they obviously like by the same standard? Isn't that interfering in an election? Do you see how this is the same thing as 2016 in so many ways? I mean, not to say that there aren't differences. There are certainly differences. There's differences between Trump and Bernie Sanders. There's differences between the Republican and the Democratic supporters. But it is almost like shocking how much to a T the same type of game plan is being followed. And like I said before, you know, a lot of things I don't like about Donald Trump, a lot of things I don't like about Bernie Sanders. But I can see that they are both deemed as unacceptable by the establishment. And this establishment, when I talk about the establishment, I'm talking about the corporate press, the DNC, the RNC, the intelligence communities, this whole, you know, like group. And they, like, you know, George W. Bush or Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or Mitt Romney, all of those people are acceptable to them. So this is kind of the interesting thing from my perspective is that, you know, even as far ago as, you know, 10, 12 years ago, I remember, you know, Ron Paul used to make this point and it was really, you know, at the time, like now it seems so obvious, but at the time it was kind of like, oh shit, that's a really good point, where he would just be like, there's no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans, like on any of the issues that matter. There's no difference. Like, there are these slight little differences around the edges, like which group is going to get money if they get in, whose friends are going to get taken care of. Maybe one says they're for a 39% tax rate and the other for 35. But then even when the Democrats get in, they keep the 35% rate for a while, you know, before it goes back up to 39. Like, these differences are made. But when it comes to foreign policy, monetary policy, domestic policy, the prison industrial complex policy, like all of these things that are the most important things, they all never get changed. They have the exact same positions on both of those issues. And if you really look down Hillary Clinton's policies and Jeb Bush's policies, they are very, very similar. I mean, their rhetoric might be a little bit different. They might be playing to different groups of people, but in terms of what they're actually going to do when they govern, very, very similar. And all of the sudden, one of the things that's interesting about politics from 2016 and now to 2020 is now you have these guys, Trump and Bernie Sanders, who it looks like very likely are going to be the two facing off in the general election, who are not exactly the same. And because they're not exactly the same, the fucking establishment is freaking out and using all of these tactics to try to stop them. And this makes for a fucking interesting situation, if nothing else. And maybe at least I'd hope like the best case scenario that I see out of it is that at least to Trump supporters, I think they're already aware of it. And to a lot of Bernie supporters, they start realizing that it's like, oh, the fucking establishment hates you. They hate you as soon as you step outside of what they've declared the allowable space to be, which is between, you know, Lindsey Graham and John Kerry. You can pick one. Those are your options, you know? But you can't go any further than that. No further to the left and no further to the right. Definitely can't go all the way over to Rob Bernstein's libertarian sandwich society.
King of the cocks.
The king of the cocks. The ultimate king. So, looking forward, things are about to really, really heat up. I mean, we can talk about what things look like right now, but what you got is Super Tuesday in a week. So you got South Carolina. This is it. South Carolina is it for Joe Biden. Anything short of first place and Joe Biden is done. And I gotta say, I think he's not gonna win first place. That's my guess going in. I just think that he's underperforming everywhere he goes. And I think he's gonna do that again. I wanna see what the latest polls in South Carolina are right now. Let me just check that. Okay, so Biden's clinging to a narrow lead. In South Carolina. Oh, that was one poll. Hold on. Maybe it's not as narrow as I thought. Let me just pull this up real quick. So Biden, can I get the Real Clear Politics average? Biden's clinging to about, according to the average of all the polls, Biden's up by about 5 points, by about 5 points on Bernie Sanders. So it's possible Joe Biden pulls this out. It's possible. But he had a much bigger lead at one point than that. It's fun to now, if Joe Biden doesn't win first, he's done. I mean, I think he might drop out of the race that night. It's possible that he limps on, but it's over. No matter what, it's done. He has to get a first place. Look, Joe Biden's whole campaign was revolved around, I'm the front runner. I'm the one who can actually win. If your whole campaign is that I can win, you gotta win something.
People
eventually
know me.
Right. People know me. But it wasn't just, it was because people know me leading to, and I can, so I can beat Trump because people know me. If you can't even win one of these primaries, and then you can't win the one that you were up big in, and now he's gone 0-for-4 and doing terrible in the four so far, this is a disaster. So it's done for him. Now, if he does win, South Carolina, it doesn't really change any of the dynamics. In fact, it just ends up meaning more competition between Biden, Bloomberg, Klobuchar, those guys, and it's still fine for Bernie Sanders. But Super Tuesday is where there's a whole lot of states, and Bernie Sanders is going to have big wins in a lot of big states. He's going to have a big win in California. He's going to have a big win in Texas. He's going to have a big win in a lot of these big states. And I have a feeling that coming out of that, it might still be up in the air whether Bernie Sanders can lock down the delegates to avoid a contested convention, but it's going to become clear that Bernie Sanders is inevitably going to win this primary in terms of having more delegates, more votes than anybody else. And that's going to enter the next phase of this, where it's this is the next phase, like in the Trump thing after Super Tuesday, when they go, oh, yeah, there's really no way for us to stop this guy short of taking it from him at the convention. And then they got to start staring down the reality of what that would lead to, And what you're going to see is fucking, I think you would see fucking violence, protests, crazy shit if they try to steal this from Bernie Sanders again, after they already did in 2016. They didn't exactly steal it from Bernie in 2016, but they rigged it. It's a more accurate way to say is that they rigged it from the beginning against him. It's not as if he won and then they took it from him, but they rigged it so that he couldn't win, if that makes sense, right? So that's kind of the difference, but this would be actually stealing it from him. This is an even bigger slap in the face, even more outrageous, and I just don't think that shit is going to fly with those horrible, violent, sexist Bernie bros. That's my guess. All right, that's the show for today. Thank you guys very much for listening. I love you all. We'll be coming to a city near you. Don't you worry. We're going to have a whole bunch more shows coming up in the future. Go follow Robbie the Fire at Robbie the Fire on Twitter. Go check out his hilarious, informative podcast, Run Your Mouth. And we will be back on Wednesday with a brand new episode. Peace.